Thank you. Thank you, and thanks for Ray Bryant for inviting me to give this talk. I'm going to talk about not necessarily soluble calcium, but FDG gypsum. So let's see now. How do we operate here? We got here. Where's the? Okay, let's go on back. Oops, forward.
Gotta go back.
Okay, here we go. All right. So I'm going to be talking about reducing losses as a result of the application of flue gas desulfurization gypsum, FGD gypsum applications as one aspect of a broader study investigating the interactions between gypsum and broiler litter. This picture actually was on the cover of JEQ in March 2013. It features Harry Schomburg standing over Jeff Scarborough, who are actually working overtime at a particular rainfall simulation in Georgia. So this presentation actually is going to be more focusing on reducing pathogen losses, specifically on structural and conservation management practices that have been developed to reduce manure pathogen loads from reaching surface waters that may impact public health. So watersheds containing dairies, beef cattle, swine operations, poultry operations, wildlife, crop and hay fields, fertilized with manure, these are all potential non-point sources of zoonotic pathogens that contaminate, or possibly can contaminate, surface waters. And these, how do we work the arrow here? Is this it right here? Okay, here we go. Right, I guess I can. So here we have four pathogens, three bacterial pathogens, Salmonella, E. coli 0157H7, Campylobacter, and the protozoan pathogen, Cryptosporidium parvum. These particular pathogens have they have variable die-off rates. They can survive in soil and water. They have relatively low infective doses, as you can see here. Here we go. Anyway, with these, it because of this, they have and they continue to threaten public health. All four of these pathogens have made national headlines. There was the multi-state outbreak of Salmonella infections linked to cantaloupe in 2012, and it caused three deaths. Multi-state outbreak of E. coli 0157H7 infections linked to fresh spinach in 2012. There was an outbreak of Campylobacter infections linked to raw milk in 2012, and a waterborne outbreak of cryptosporidiosis in North Battlefield, Canada in 2001. So I'm just going to give you some examples of what some of these non-point sources look like. So here we have the idyllic dairy on the left. We have the less idyllic free-ranging hog operation on the right. Here we have an application of poultry litter to a no-till field, actually one of these experimental fields in Watkinsville, Georgia, that no longer exists. An application of dairy cow calf manure. A slurry application. Application of a swine lagoon effluent, and grazing cattle in a watershed. So conservation practices reducing hydrologic transport of fecal pathogens. Many of them have been developed. I'm going to talk about briefly riparian vegetation buffer strips, ponds and agricultural watersheds, and then I'm going to focus on flue gas desulfurization gypsum applications. So riparian vegetation buffer strips. Here we have an idealized set of buffer strips, one for crops, one for pasture. This is actually a diagram. This probably came from NRCS. Here we have an aerial view of riparian vegetation buffer strips I'm not sure where these were, but these were also, I think, taken by NRCS. So there's been plot and field studies that have demonstrated the buffer strips reduce loads of E. coli, fecal coliforms, and cryptosporidium in overland runoff. So next I'm going to talk about ponds and agricultural watersheds. So this would be another effective conservation practice, strategically placed and constructed ponds and agricultural watersheds with perennial inflows and outflows and long retention times provide natural mechanisms of pathogen disinfection such as solar UV irradiation and microbial predation. And here we have data from a 31-month experiment or study looking at the in and out fluxes of fecal indicator bacteria under base flow conditions, demonstrating that transit through the pond, the one that I just showed you, significantly reduced their outflow fluxes by greater than 2 logs, as shown here for E. coli. We did a tracer experiment with E. coli in this very same pond, where we demonstrated die-off of a pulse of 10 to the 13 E. coli. Well, here we go, starting over here, starting off at the inflow 10 to the 13 E. coli cells in the pulse. And this pulse transited the pond. The convergence of the cumulative load of E. coli in the pond's outflow and the hypothetical mass of the spiked E. coli cells remaining in the pond based on a previously observed die-off parameter, that is the T99 value of 20 days. That is, it takes 20 days to reduce for the die-off to reduce 99% of the total concentration. So this indicated that die-off occurred and was close to the hypothetical rate. So this strategically placed and constructed ponds and watersheds can reduce base flow fluxes of fecal indicator bacteria, and such ponds can also reduce storm flow fluxes of fecal bacteria, as we demonstrated in a study that's going to be coming out in agricultural water management next year. Okay, now to go on to flue gas desulfurization, gypsum. So we heard a lot already about the effects of gypsum as it's applied. I'm just going to be talking about flue gas, particularly flue gas, FGD gypsum, and how it's, you know, affects soil fertility, water infiltration, soil conservation, reduction of plant nutrient losses from manure applications. And based on these benefits, we hypothesize that gypsiferous soil amendments will decrease hydrologic loads, the fecal bacteria, and rainfall runoff. So, beginning in 2009 and 2000, and going through 2011, we applied gypsum, and we had rainfall simulations in 2009 and 2011. I just also would like to say that based on Google and Web of Science searches, that the pathogen aspect of this study, it was just, you know, one part of it. It was a larger study, but it's one of a kind, which also means that there could be some more experiments looking at the effect of gypsum on the transport of pathogens. So the experimental design was comprised of 6 treatments in a completely randomized block design with 3 blocks. You can sort of see them as you're going down the slope. We had 4 applications of gypsum, 0, 2.2, 4.5, and 9 megagrams per hectare. We had 2 rates of broiler litter, 0 and 13.5 megagrams per hectare. This is the configuration of the plots. We have a 1 by 2 meter subplot that was delineated by galvanized metal plates within a 4 by 6 plot. Here I am. In 2009, 5 weeks elapsed between the litter application and rainfall simulation, and because of that, the fecal bacteria in the litter died off to background levels, which you'll see we didn't see any differences in the treatments. And so in 2011, we applied an inoculum of a prepared inoculum of 100 grams of oven-dried sieved litter, which we inoculated with 10 to the 11 viable E. coli cells. And this inoculum was applied at the day of the rainfall simulation. This is what I'm doing here. So runoff was collected. We assayed for E. coli and Salmonella. At initiation of runoff, the samples were collected every 5 minutes for 1 hour, the rainfall rate at 64 millimeters per hour, and this was one that was would be compared to a 1 in 10 year rainfall event. So Salmonella was never an issue. In 2009, a concentration of 50 Salmonella per gram of litter was measured. Salmonella was not detected in runoff or in soil in 2009. And then in 2011, the Salmonella was not detected in litter, runoff, or soil. So here we have data on the flow-weighted concentrations and the total loads of E. coli in runoff. And in 2009, you can see actually in both, that there's no significant difference in any of the treatments for the flow-weighted concentrations or the total load. However, for 2011, we see that the 4.5 and the 9 megagrams per hectare of gypsum actually decrease significantly the flow-weighted concentrations. The total loads were decreased significantly by the 9 megagrams per hectare of gypsum. And this is also seen, this decrease, in the fact that with this higher application of gypsum, it's reflected in the significant decrease in the percentage of E. coli recovered in runoff. So after a third year of applications of FGD gypsum, the high rate of 9 megagrams per hectare decreased the E. coli load in runoff. And these results demonstrated that FGD gypsum applications may be considered a management practice capable of reducing hydrologic loads of fecal bacteria and other pathogenic fecal microorganisms. So there's three take-home points. One, the three conservation management practices presented can reduce hydrologic loads of manure-borne pathogens. Two, these practices are complementary. Three, the synergy from combinations of these practices could further enhance reducing manure-borne pathogen contamination of surface waters from agricultural watersheds. Thank you.